You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Wednesday, 9 October. The FOMC minutes from the September meeting will be out tonight. Central bank nerds the world over will be poring over them. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Jimmy Mioha. So I was having a look at the Resi Index yesterday. It's flat year to date. But of course, there's all sorts of moving parts within that. Casey Sprague, investment analyst, fixed income from Anchor, rising food inflation globally and even a little bit locally. And then we're chatting with FNB Asset-Based Finance on the sort of big uptake in corporate and SME in this space. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Five investors in Ponzi scheme fail in bid to get investments back. Follows funds remaining in bank accounts belonging to director of Crypto Mzansi being declared forfeited to the state. You can't make money from a crime. That simple. Business Day, PayShap hopes to push instant payments to Standard Bank up tenfold. Number of clients registering for digital payment platform grows. Got to say, I love PayShap. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up a percent, NASDAQ up 1.6%. The East is mostly red, Sydney 0.1% down, Tokyo is up 0.6%, while Hong Kong down 2%, Tencent down 2.9%. Commodities, mostly red, gold 2,636, Brent 77.33, platinum 962, and palladium the green at 1,022. Rand 17.60, Bitcoin 62,300, and top 40 opening call 145 points to the red, 0.2% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Mioha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. As I said in the intro there, I was having a look at the Resi 10 index. And over the course of the year, from the beginning of, 1st of Jan through to close yesterday, the index is essentially flat, which belies two things. Firstly, it's been down a lot, up a lot, and now sideways, but also various different moving parts within that. PGMs, gold, diversified. When you look at the Resi, I mean, are you seeing stock value somewhere? Is this something which you're fundamentally just staying away from?
Morning, Simon. Yeah, so when you look at the index itself, I mean, as you said, there's been a lot of moving parts throughout the year, and it is interesting that at some point that Resi was down significantly and we weren't really sure where to place our bets, where it came to the mining companies and the companies that make up the Resi. But at the same time, that was largely due to pricing. The conditions have changed quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. We've definitely seen a shift from when China announced that stimulus package to what the market is now seeing within markets. And if you can look at any real commodity price, whether you're looking at copper, whether you're looking at iron ore pricing, whether you're looking at coal pricing, gold pricing, as you mentioned, or even the PGMs, you see a very distinct pattern, regardless of the commodity you look at, is that it's gone through and kind of found its bottom, found its dip, and is now looking for that next leg to the upside. And if you think back to everything that's happened just to the 2008 financial crisis and all other times of uncertainty like this in the past, every time we've kind of come through this trough of bearishness and we've started the next bull run in the market, commodities have historically done fairly well. As long as demand has kept up, then commodities has done well. And that demand side of that conversation is the other side of that conversation at the moment that's crucial. You saw that everything prior to the Chinese stimulus was we need to see demand return. Then the Chinese stimulus gets announced and suddenly we're rallying on multiple fronts, but that stimulus hasn't yet fully felt its effect into the market. And if you look at the response to that, markets are still cautious and markets are still waiting to see if that is the case. But alongside that, there's still geopolitical tensions. There's still multiple wars being fought on multiple fronts around the world. And that's going to have a bearing on sentiment. It's going to have a bearing on what consumers do. But to answer the question, is there value? Yes.
This almost seems, and I take your point, and I mean, it's been a wild year. I mean, it was down, I don't know, 14%, up 18% at one point. I like your conclusion there. There is value. It might not be this week, but, you know, in investing, if we've got some time on our side, you know, when commodities start to run, I mean, crazy things happen, and it's a patience game.
It absolutely is, and I will quote David Shapiro on this one. Mm-hmm. The markets are never going to wait for you before they start that rally. So when you're looking at markets, especially when you're looking in the commodity space, when that move does start to happen, and we saw trickles of it a couple of weeks ago where the resi would do 3% or 4% in a single day and sustain that kind of momentum over 2 or 3 days. I remember it did that, I think, last month or the month before that. And that gives you a clear indication of the fact that when it does start to run and it does start to move, you're not going to have time to say, let's see what happens before we get in. So if you're finding opportunities of value and pockets of value where you're able to get in at really deep discounts, understanding that the world, the mining world in particular, where the bulk of our resi companies are focused, isn't going to suddenly stop overnight. And you look at companies like Sibanye-Stillwater that have been under immense pressure, and now recently JP Morgan has increased their stake in them. Clearly, the major asset managers and the global institutional allocators of capital are seeing that when the next commodity run does happen, it might not look the same as what we've seen in the past, but it might still be worth it.
Yep, and I like that point from David. When it starts to move, it's not going to wait for you. Jimmy Muyaha, independent analyst, appreciate the early morning. Let your money weather the storms for Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Standing now with Casey Sprake, investment analyst, fixed income at Anchor. Casey, appreciate the early morning time. Recent note you put out, you're talking around the UN Food and Agricultural Organization's Global Food Price Index. A big mouthful there, but essentially a benchmark for global food commodity prices. September saw its fastest increase in 18 months. We're starting to see commodity prices, food commodity prices, moving higher and in some cases at a slightly accelerated rate.
Hi there. Good morning, Simon. Thanks for having me on the show today. And yeah, that's 100% it. You know, both internationally and locally, we are seeing a sort of confluence of dynamics at the moment, both, you know, internationally and locally, that's really starting to trickle through to our food inflation. You mentioned there the very mouthful of the United Nations Food Price Index. And as you said, you know, that serves as the benchmark for global food commodity prices. And yeah, we're really seeing that rise on, I think it was about 3% on a month-on-month basis for August, that formed a 2.1% year-on-year rise. And it was most of the sub-indices that make this this sort of index, so all the different types of food groups that actually rose. I mean, particularly led by sugar prices, which is quite alarming. They had a 10.4% month-on-month rise.
And you make the point in the note, and I mean, food, yeah, we kind of think, you know, you mentioned sugar. I'm like, yeah, well, we grow that down in KZN. There's our sugar and a bit in Mpumalanga. But it is, you know, food has become globalized. I mean, the challenge is here is, you know, poor crops in Brazil, worries about India, and they relax methane production from sugarcane. Food is becoming significantly globalized as a commodity, and particularly in the pricing space.
Yes, 100%. And I mean, it's important to remember that within us, you know, our local market, even though, of course, we have, you know, great levels of agricultural production, we remain at the end of the day a net importer of food items. You know, we are very much beholden to international sort of trade activity, to general pricing. And of course, don't forget, you know, the impact of currency appreciations as well. And we're just seeing there's so many dynamics at play at the moment, lots of adverse weather conditions across key production areas in the globe within South Africa as well. If you look at the latest run of our maize prices, given that most of our maize has been really, you know, produced in our drought-ridden areas, and we're seeing a lot of those elevated costs, and that, of course, you know, spills through the various production cycles to the prices we see on the shelves at the end of the day.
Our latest CPI data came in a nice number, and certainly below the 4.5 that the governor always likes, below that mid-range. Did we see any data there that suggests our local food inflation is picking up?
Yes, 100%. So, you know, as you mentioned, headline rates, or overall inflation rate, decreased to 4.4%. But we actually saw our food and non-alcoholic beverages inflation number actually uptick in August to 4.7%. So you're really seeing those pools of pricing. And when you're seeing these international prices rise, we know that that's going to start to sort of trickle down to our local market as well. If you look at your producer inflation as well, that did drop. But the indices that make up that component, particularly manufactured food price inflation, that actually increased 3.4% on a yearly basis in August. So that, you know, sort of bodes to pull through to our own markets. And of course, you know, we're coming towards the end of the year, festive season. We normally see a typical uptick in prices there, particularly in your meat components, for example.
You mentioned we're ultimately a net importer of food. That then says to me that a stronger rand actually helps us. I mean, I think as South Africans, we always like a stronger rand. The miners probably don't agree so much, but a stronger rand's going to help on food pricing, sort of keep a lid on it, maybe even send it a little lower.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, the appreciation of the rand, in addition to, of course, the interest rate cut that we saw in September in South Africa, that really does help sort of lower inflation on our imported food products. But there is always a flip side to that. Bear in mind, you know, we are a strong export nation as well. We are beholden to sort of price dynamics, you know, good old supply and demand. And we are exporting quite massive amounts of our food items at the moment, particularly towards our neighboring countries who are extremely drought ridden. Think of Namibia, Zimbabwe, Zambia. We've got huge volumes of exports going out at the moment due to the sort of desperation on that side. And even in our maize market, for instance, a huge component of our food inflation basket. So our maize production is down about 22% from our last season. But at the same time, we're still exporting significantly large volumes to those countries that I just mentioned.
Yeah, and we had it's down a lot because we'd had some record years there, but we'll leave it there. That's Casey Sprake, investment analyst, fixed income anchor. Appreciate the early morning time, and that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have you noticed higher food prices? Maybe put it the other way. Have you ever seen lower food prices? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Plymouth Councillor Khadebe, CEO, Asset Based Finance at FNB Commercial. Appreciate the early morning time today. I suppose let's start with the broad basic question. What is asset based finance?
Hi, Simon. Thank you so much. So, what is asset based finance? It's actually secured term finance, so term lending, right? So I guess in the medium to longish term, so looking at 2 to 5 years, you could go up to 8 years, and it varies. You can finance all sorts of productive assets, plant, equipment, motor vehicles, yellow metal, tractors, so any asset that helps you generate revenue. So, you know, we like to call it more meaningfully, you know, we exist to finance productive assets, right? For customers, for commercial customers, for corporate customers. And I believe it is an important cog for inclusive economic growth.
I take your point on that, of course, because I go and buy, I don't know, a grader or whatever the case may be, a new fridge for my business or something like that. It's enabling me to grow that business. And in a note you put out, you've been seeing fairly strong growth in the corporate sector around this.
No, absolutely. I think, look, just even widely available information data from the South African Reserve Bank, the SARB, kind of reports year to date, let's just say up to September, you know, asset-based finance has grown by up to 12.9% year on year compared to the same period last year. I think it was until August. So businesses are starting to do the right thing. So why do we say that? You know, previously, you'd use cash on hand, you'd use working capital to fund a long-term asset. So this whole concept that we know more about in finance circles around, you know, just liquidity management, even matching and just cash flow management overall. So more and more the product is being used correctly.
How flexible would you be? I mean, you mentioned terms of 2-5, perhaps as many as 8 years, but let's say I'm a farmer. So, you know, I farm all year, but I only harvest twice a year. Is there even space for flexibility in terms of depending what I'm using that asset for in terms of repayment terms and the like?
And that is exactly the point. What is the point of having this asset and yet your financial repayment obligations are not matched to how you receive your revenue? So, I mean, I like that you use the farming example. Mm. That's exactly the point. You know, farmers have really prescriptive productive cycles, right? They depend on the weather. They depend on demand. They depend on season. So what we do there is that if a farmer then harvests twice a year, then we'd have semi-annual payments, so twice a year or biannual payments. And when we have customers who have big harvest, say in June, July, sometimes August, mm-hmm. then, you know, we have our June, July, August, September. We know that's when our big annual repayers, specifically in farming, will then service their obligations. So, you know, it depends on your line of business. And the reason is, this is a conversation you have up front, right? To say, okay, tell me about, you know, your cash flow cycle. And then this comes up front. And then you try and structure to meet this, because if you don't, then everybody is, I mean, my impairment go up and then your cash flow is also squeezed. So, I mean, it's not win-win, not at all.
I take the point in that. And to your earlier point, it really is around helping corporates sort of manage cash flows. And I imagine it's probably particularly critical for really capital intensive. I'm thinking mining, agricultural is certainly one of those. Probably in many senses, manufacturing as well. This really does help them in terms of that expansion. And as you mentioned, ultimately, you know, economic growth, GDP growth and employment in our country.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, as you're talking, we know that, you know, pre-COVID or just around that COVID area, everybody sweated their assets. Nobody was replacing. And then, you know, what happens is that you fall back, there are new products in the market, there's modernization. So even with your replacement cycles, we want to be there, whether if you're in manufacturing and, you know, there's new technology or there's an upgrade that you can add into your kind of current operation, we can help you with that. If it's now time to now replace these assets that you've had on book for 4 years, 48 months, or, you know, and it's time, here we come again. So right across the board, right across industries. And of course, you know, mining and agriculture, those primary sectors, very capital intensive. And what we're starting to see a shift in South Africa is that this kind of secondary manufacturing side of things is really picking up. That's really where the growth is going to come from. Of course, the volumes will never be as big as agriculture and mining, but that's really the new growth that we are all kind of looking at and waiting for that big spend and backing in the economy.
I imagine not just, you know, we've been talking miners, construction, largely big corporates, SMEs as well?
Oh, this question I absolutely love, because here's the thing, you know, the large corporates, the medium corporates, they've always done this. They've got professionals, right? They're finance people to help them navigate this, to talk to bankers and to even negotiate, you know, negotiate terms and structures, etc. And with SMEs, you'd find that, you know, yes, it's equity, there's money around, and you don't always have to use all your equity to buy all your assets. Some of it, you know, a bit of leveraging, a bit of what we mean by that, you know, start using cheaper forms of capital, such as debt, when your business, of course, is at a level that's starting to show that you've got sustainable EBITDA and just cash flow. So we are saying that, you know, preserve your cash, use it for your working capital requirements, your day-to-day, use your cash for paying your suppliers, for paying your employees, etc., just the day-to-day stuff, and then preserve that cash, then get into long-term financing. So SMEs in particular is really a segment, a client segment that we're focused on, and we use kind of analytical scoring models so you can even get your answer a lot quicker. And we have origination capabilities to kind of help at scale fund SMEs.
And hugely important. I mean, it can absolutely leapfrog them to the next level. And we know most jobs are being created by those smaller companies. We leave it there. Kanse Gedebe, CEO, asset-based finance at FNB Commercial. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. A correction from yesterday's show. I was chatting with Chantal Marks about Cogra M3, and I said that the group and CEO and CFO were leaving. Not correct. Group CEO is exiting. MD Memorial Parks is exiting, not the group CFO. We were also chatting with Kingsley Williams yesterday from Satrix, talking around opportunities in India. We asked if you were investing into India. About 40% said interested, but not yet. The rest was split between, yep, doing great, rate, and it certainly has been, or they were preferring others. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating and a positive review on your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.